Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello and welcome to the Roker Report Extra Pod in association with our friends at the Sunderland Community Soup Kitchen. I'm Brett and thanks for downloading this pod, which according to Love Supreme in their recent poll is the number one of all Sunderland podcasts. So I am pleased you did that poll this weekend and not next weekend after my pod. It might be a different sort of result. So we'll move straight on. After Tuesday night's defeat against Plymouth, we are looking ahead to Saturday's game versus Shrewsbury. And also, you know, we'll be chatting more about where we go from here, really, because it's a bit of a funny time for us. But I'm not alone. Today, I'm joined by a couple of exiles. One is in Oxford, and that's Jimmy Lowson. Jimmy, how are you doing?
Yeah, good, thanks. Yourself?
I'm good, thank you, mate. I'm pleased I'm doing this pod rather than the one straight after yesterday's game, because I think I'm in quite such a bubbly mood.
I'm still licking my wounds a little. I'm not going to lie. It was one of those where this has kind of been dawning over me all day. It's like, oh no. Like, I had rewatching the highlights back about half an hour ago was painful. Painful. It's just like, oh my God, of all the weeks to be back on. But I'm sure you'll pick my mood up, Brett. I'm sure we'll have a laugh anyway.
Well, if I can't do it, I'm sure this man can. It's all the way in Australia. It's Martin Wanless. Martin, how are you?
I'm all right, miss. I'm all right. How are you?
Again, I'll say I'm good, mate. I'm good. I think as Sunderland fans, we're used to being sort of repeatedly kicked in the stomach. So, we've got to roll with it, I think.
We do. Those kicks just keep on coming, though, don't they? When you think we might have turned a corner and we're on an upward trajectory, we get another slam in the face. So, yeah, interesting times.
No, it does. It keeps happening. So, we will just sort of go back on to, we'll touch upon sort of Tuesday night's game and say we will talk more about Sunderland going forward. You know, there's obviously 11 days left of this transfer window. But let's look at the glamour tie this weekend, which is Shrewsbury. Now, I think it's fair to say that Burge will sort of stay in goal. I don't think there's any sort of question marks over that. But Lee Johnson he's favouring this kind of strange 4-2-2-2 formation they sort of keep sort of bringing out. So, Jimmy, let's look at this actual formation and where we actually think we're going to end up playing on Saturday. So, the back four. Well, let's start at the right back. So, Max Power, is he for you a right back? Is he for you going to start on Saturday, obviously, now that, Sanderson may go into the centre? What's your initial thoughts on Max Power?
I quite like him there. I think he's been pretty good as a right back, to be honest. The thing with Max Power is, like, sort of as his form's dipped and flowed over the last 2.5 years, you can never really question his commitment. I think, especially in the empty stadiums, more than anyone else, he's Sunderland's most vocal player. He's somebody who absolutely loves playing football, loves throwing himself into challenges. And I think that right back slot works quite well for him because he can bomb up and down, he can use his energy, he can tackle people, he can be aggressive. And he's not the best cross in the world, but he's not terrible either. So sort of as another option, especially with McLaughlin out and 09 working his way back to fitness, I don't mind Power there. I think really it's going to come down to, like you touched on, Brett, whether or not he goes with 09, whether 09's fit enough to start, whether Lee Johnson likes 09 as a fullback, who's obviously a player he's not really been able to test out yet. I think that's what it's going to come down to. My hunch, which one would I prefer to see start? I mean, I think Power might move back into the middle. I think it's once again, it's a knock-on thing. It's like, does Josh Scowen finally get dropped? If Josh Scowen finally gets dropped, does Max Power move into midfield? And it's all sort of a domino effect, really, because I think it'll be him or 09 with, like you said, Sanderson playing in the middle. But I don't know, I'm open to being convinced which one of them gets the nod, Power or 09 in there.
Martin, yourself, where would you favour then? Out of, if you had a choice of Max Power and Luke 09, who would be your right back on Saturday?
I would go with Power out of those two, simply because I think 09's probably more effective, or potentially more effective for us further up the pitch. And I think, you know, you look at the team as a whole, and our goal scoring threat is pathetic. You know, we just can't bag a bloody goal, can we? Apart from King Charlie White with his ridiculous hat trick. So you look, like, to me, 09 is one of the few players who's actually a relatively natural goal scorer. And I think he's got goals in his locker, and we've seen that from right back, right wing back. And I would love to see 09 given a chance in that advanced midfield role, because I think he can add goals to us. And I'd be really interested to see where Johnson actually puts him when he gets him onto the field, because obviously Johnson hasn't had him available for real selection. Obviously, he's been on the bench the last couple of games, hasn't he? So I think, like, who plays right back will be determined by how Johnson sees 09 in terms of attacking value for his team.
No, it's going to be a real interesting one once 09 actually does get back. And I say he's been on the bench last two games, so he must be nearing some sort of fitness. And to be fair, I think he's quite a fit lad anyway. I don't think he's going to take him too long to get up to speed. It was a shoulder injury, wasn't he, had. So he's still going to be able to be out right now doing some sort of like leg work. But no, it's going to be interesting to see where he plays. And I think to go for like the rest of that back four of the defence, I think actually it all picks itself anyway. Because, you know, if I'm wrong here, then you're going to have Power, Wright, Sanderson, and then McFadden on the left-hand side with Hume being stood out. I don't see anything else can be played in those positions. Can either of you guys, Jimmy, can you see anything else apart from really them three slots being taken up by those three?
The only curveball I can think of is Sanderson at left back, and then Younger coming into the team. That's the only one I can think of. And Sanderson was good. Was it the Lincoln game? No, it was 0-0 against Northampton, wasn't it, where he played left back?
Yeah, it was.
He was pretty good there, yeah. It comes down to balance, really. Like you sort of mentioned, Brett, this 4-2-2 formation. I can only really think of two or three teams that play it. And typically, I mean, Southampton are the only team I can think of in England that do it. And they have pretty good fullbacks that are pretty good going forward. So I wonder whether, if we are going to stick with this formation, he'd want the balance of McFadden on the left with all the defensive drawbacks that go with it. I wonder whether he'd rather have somebody that can actually go up and down and contribute going forward, and take the sort of drawbacks that you get on the other side with a guy who clearly just doesn't enjoy tackling, doesn't enjoy defending, isn't aggressive at all on the pitch. I think Johnson might sort of say, right, this is it. We'll put up with McFadden until we get Hume back, and keep sort of the three that you mentioned playing in those slots to give us a better balance, to give us a better chance of breaking down teams. But Sanderson's the only curveball there, really, for me.
Well, it seems as if he's had an agreement with Wolves that Sanderson's got to play, doesn't he? Because he had some interest from Cardiff last week, and I think Johnson said he'd spoken to Wolves and assured them that Sanderson would be getting a lot more game time. So it's almost as if we've kind of got to have Sanderson in that back four somewhere, which obviously isn't a bad thing because he looks a good player. But where he actually fits in is the question, isn't it?
Well, I was going to say there, you know, it's not a bad thing him actually being in that back four, I say, because he's probably one of our better defenders anyway.
No, I like him. He looks comfortable on the ball. He brings the ball out. He passes it well. He looks a class above League One, doesn't he?
The other thing as well is we're all fans. We all think he's one of our better players. Willis's injury, is it a blessing in disguise? Now, can we actually say Sanderson and Bailey Wright, put them in the team sheet, let them gain a partnership, let them learn what it's like to play with each other, and hopefully pencil those guys in for 70, 80% of our games between now and the end of the season? Is that the partnership, if there is going to be a run, if there is going to be a playoff push, are those the two to do it? I think that's what we've got, obviously, hope for, because I think they're our two most talented defenders.
I think it brings a bigger question, though, doesn't it, with Johnson's sort of team selection and formation in back four, which we'll probably come on to later on. But those players that we've described there, and obviously we are a little short in centre backs at the minute with the injuries that we have, but the full backs that we've talked about, 09, Power, McFadden, even Denver Hume, they're far better playing as more advanced fullbacks or wingbacks than they are as fullbacks in a flat back four. And, you know, Bailey Wright, to me, has looked a shadow of the player he was when he was playing at the centre of three defenders as well. So I think it brings another conversation about that, you know, back four versus back three / back five, and whether Johnson's been too quick to get rid of that defensive element of the team he inherited.
Well, I think you'll find now, and I've said this a few times on the pods, modern day fullbacks, very few actually defend anyway. You know, there's very few that can do both attacking and defending to a real high quality. You think, you know, obviously a million miles away from where we are, but someone like Ashley Cole, a left back, could defend and attack equally as well as each other. Denver Hume, for us, you know, he's okay, you know, defending, he's good at attacking, his final ball's not quite there. So I think for our level, we're always going to struggle to get an out-and-out left back that can also then do that overlapping runs and attacking as well. So it's always going to be difficult. Because someone like McFadden, it's never started for him here for us. I think that first game he had, he looked really good and looked like he was going to really push on and give Denver Hume some competition. But Martin, as soon as I said his name a minute ago, you literally groaned.
It's telling in itself, isn't it? He's a plodder, isn't he? He's, you know, he's mid 20s. He's playing in division, well, in the fourth division. Wasn't in League Two last season for Plymouth. He's a plodder. He's a rank average, horrendous footballer who we just have to endure at the minute. And it makes my eyes burn to watch players like that play for us.
It's hard work. It really is. So let's move away then from your burning eyes. Move into the the first of the twos. So you've got your two defensive midfielders. Now, yesterday we had Winchester making his actual debut for us. And then you've also got the options then of Josh Scowen, who seems to be flavour of the month. You've got Leadbitter in there. You've got Dobson, obviously seems completely out of the picture for now. And then obviously possibly Max Power, but I think we said he's going to realistically be right back. Where do you guys feel then we need to be on Saturday to get a result out of them sort of midfield options? Martin, I'll go with you first.
I think the central midfield pairing that we picked on Tuesday was obviously lacking in something. But it was telling that, you know, Scowen played for Johnson at Barnsley, and I think Johnson trusts Scowen. And obviously Winchester's his first signing for the club. And I saw a bit of criticism of Winchester's debut, and that, you know, obviously it wasn't a great debut, but in the context of a really bad performance, I thought he was all right. I think he's got a little bit of stature. He goes looking for the ball and he moves the ball quickly, which is something that we've lacked in central midfield. So to me, I think, you know, especially if we're playing that back four, Grant Leadbitter does a great job just sitting and covering the fullbacks when they move up. So to me, I'd like to see Leadbitter and Winchester in midfield as a pairing. I think that, you know, there is an argument, and there was a good Reader's Corner post on the site this week looking at sort of George Dobson and kind of saying he's probably been a bit unfairly criticised at Sunderland because he's been asked to do a more advanced role than he naturally would do. And I think if Johnson's playing that, you know, those two holding midfield players, there is an argument at some point to bring Dobson into that mix with Leadbitter and Scowen and Winchester. You've obviously got four there who could probably do that job. As Jimmy says, like, Scowen seems to be flavour of the month, but no, and I actually like Scowen. I think he's got a bit about him, but I just think his form over the past few weeks has been poor. He obviously put a nice ball through for Wyke to get his hat-trick last Saturday, didn't he? But his set pieces have been poor. He gives the ball away and he just doesn't look at it. Yeah, for me, I think my two sitting midfield players would be Leadbitter and Winchester.
Jimmy, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I'm in agreement largely. Like, Josh Scowen, I think he's a really talented guy. He can run with the ball. He's good technically for this level. He can pick a pass, like Martin said, for Wyke's hat-trick. He's just been playing terribly. He's just been playing terribly for ages. He's just been really, really rubbish consistently, and he could probably do with a break. The problem is, if we are going to be playing with two holding midfielders and we need someone alongside Leadbitter, I'm assuming Leadbitter's going to come back in because Shrewsbury are going to sit deep and he's our best long-range passer. He's our best sort of forward passer in midfield. I kind of feel like you need to play Scowen or Power there just for their legs, just for their running. Largely in agreement with Martin about Winchester's debut. I thought he was fine. Yeah. I think he looks quite comfortable on the ball. He's quite physically strong. He just looked a bit lost in the system. There were quite a few times where he looked to play a ball out to a fullback or to another midfielder, and there was no one there. He just looked a bit lost. And I think with time, he could be a good player here. But yeah, no, I'm really sort of stuck because the system we played just didn't work at all. And I'm sat here thinking, is Johnson going to persist with it? Is he earmarked that as the best formation for the players we've got, or are we going to try something new again? And that's kind of really the dilemma. It's like, are we going to go back to 4-3-3, or is Johnson going to blame yesterday on the conditions, spend more time getting this formation right on the training pitch? And if so, I think it would be in his best interest to play Leadbitter and Power, really. But I could easily see Scowen being given his fifth or sixth chance and starting in there just because he runs about a lot and he gives us those legs in midfield.
Well, that's the defensive side of things there. So attacking, we've got, I say a sport for choice, but I think that's could be
generous.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I'm looking at. That's a very generous thing to say. So out of those two attacking midfielders, you've got sort of McGeady, you've got Jack Diamond, Elliot Embleton sort of who's coming in and out, Chris Maguire, whose form is, well, nowhere to be seen at the moment. And obviously you've got Gooch, who is out. I think he's actually got COVID, hasn't he? So he's going to be out for the next sort of week or so. So out of that four, we had yesterday, obviously, Jack Diamond and Aidan McGeady. Martin, are you happy with those two? I don't think they played that bad, actually, the pair of them.
I really like Jack Diamond. I think, you know, he's a player who we need to stick with and play and, you know, keep giving chances to. I think when we come on to talking about Shrewsbury for Saturday, they've had a bit of a, you know, a few troubles with their fullbacks or wing backs that they play with. So I think having Diamond, you know, on that right hand side is a given. Like McGeady, it really depends what's going on off the field. Like we saw him being less than happy at being subbed on Tuesday night, didn't we? And I think Johnson came out with a few comments, and whether they were directed at McGeady or not, it's kind of easy to interpret that they are. And, you know, there's obviously some trouble off the field. There's obviously a bit of dissension in the camps, and whether McGeady's part of that or not, maybe Parky was right, who knows? So it'll be interesting with Johnson's team selection on Saturday to see whether McGeady's anywhere near the starting 11. Because I think he's done all right since he's come back, but he hasn't been world-beaten, has he?
No, he's not set the world alight. Honestly, you can put that down. Obviously, he's another year older than he was when he last played. He's not, you know, a young player as it is. His fitness is going to take a little bit more time to get back up and running again. I say, I think he's done well in patches, but yeah, he's not been... Well, there was talk last, you know, 2 years ago that he's pretty much a cheat code in this league, isn't he? Because he's that much better than everyone else. He's not easily the best player in the league anymore.
But I don't think he's as effective when he comes at 10 yards in field. I think where you play McGeady is him hugging the touchline and sort of stepping in if the fullback's overlapping. But I think when Johnson's playing that sort of slightly sort of narrower sort of second two, I don't think he's effective. He doesn't get the ball in the positions where he can actually, you know, he's facing the fullback. He's got more, you know, he's got 360 degrees around him on the pitch rather than having the touchline behind him. And I think that I just don't think it suits him. I think, you know, that was one of the reasons why he kind of fell out of favour with Parkinson at the start, because Parky just couldn't see a way of getting him into the side. So I think it's, and you know, there's a whole other conversation to be had around that as well, isn't it? Because like, he's out of contract at the end of the season. There's absolutely no way he's going to be at Sunderland next season.
No chance.
Are we better off playing Embleton in there, for example, giving him game time, seeing if he can do it? Because, you know, the way this season's going, we might as well use it, you know, to bed in players who we know are going to be here next season. And, you know, Embleton needs time. Dan Neal, another one, needs game time. So, you know, it brings a bigger question to the table about, you know, team selection for the longer term rather than for this week, for next week and for the following week.
No, so it's a very good point you made there, Martin. And, you know, it's that strange question, like, you know, do you give up on this season already? You say, we're only, what, 3 points behind the playoffs? You can't really judge the players because the only team's got someone 19 games, someone 21 games. So you can't really work out where you're going to be until, like, you know, the cards all fall and we can work it out from there. But, you know, would you say then for yourself, would you say go for the youngsters now, and if we don't make the playoffs, so be it?
I think we've got to do it smartly. I'm certainly not saying scrap everybody, chuck everybody out and
don't chuck all the youngsters in.
But, you know, for players who we know aren't going to be here next season and we don't think would be able to take a step up, why not give, you know, one or two of them, like Embleton, even Patterson in goal? You know, is it worthwhile giving him some game? Like, Burge is unlikely to be here next season. Remy Matthews is unlikely to be here next season. Is it worthwhile giving him a run? Or you get them out on loan. But you've got this, you know, this small group of players underneath that first 11 who haven't been proven at League One level. They need game time somewhere for us to be able to use them at any point. So, like, to me, I think there's an argument for, you know, Embleton coming in and playing that role that McGeady was playing. Because I think Embleton did pretty well against Wimbledon, and then he was hauled off fairly early in the second half, wasn't he? So I certainly wouldn't do it in a wholesale manner, But, you know, bringing one or two of them in, I think there's merit. But I certainly wouldn't be giving up on this season yet. I think with the addition of a striker, that group of players is certainly good enough to be competing for a playoff place, at least.
Jimmy, just going back to my sort of original question as we were going through the teams. So we've had hearing from Martin there regarding those two attacking sort of midfield roles. Yourself then, would you sort of stick with McGeady and Jack Diamond, or would you be looking at changing that?
For me, Embleton has to start. To me, that's just a no-brainer. I thought he was excellent against Port Vale in the Pizza Trophy. I thought he was really good in the game after against Wimbledon, even if, like Martin said, he did get taken off. To me, it's Embleton and one other. I seem to be in the minority, including Lee Johnson. I think it's me and Aidan McGeady out on an island thinking he played quite well yesterday and our attack just went to absolute pieces after he came off. So if Johnson makes the call that, look, this guy, I think Johnson used the phrase something culturally wrong. He definitely used the word culture in his post-match interview. So if McGeady culturally doesn't fit and he doesn't make the squad, I'm fine with that. If we're picking players based on ability, I'd like to see Embleton and McGeady start there, really. I mean, Diamond's really good. I think he's better suited playing in the 4-3-3. I think he's a really good option off the bench. But to me, the Sunderland have looked a lot more dangerous as a team in the last sort of 2 weeks when Embleton is playing, and I'd like to see him start.
I was going to get to a little bit later on, but I thought, you know, great time to pick it up now, that on your comment about this culturally wrong, there is something wrong, I think, at our club at the moment. And I do think, as you know, Martin's sort of said it there, you know, we've got decent players who should be able to get into the playoffs at least this season. I know, so when we had like Roy Keane at the club, there was seemed to be this different mindset. The team were, you know, they weren't the best players in the world, but there was this never say die attitudes. You know, they were never going to get defeated. You know, the amount of late goals we scored, they were never going to give up. There was a winning mentality, even if they weren't quite there themselves. But this seems to be, and this is going 5-6 years now, we have got a loser's mentality to our club. You know, we've got a second best mentality. And I know Lee Johnson, when he first came in, mentioned things about the clocks not being changed and even the little things like that. But it seems to even now be going on to things like the pitch. Like, how terrible did our pitch look last night? You know, we're playing on a beautiful 47,000 all-seater stadium on a potato field. There's something not right, I don't think, at the club. And I think Lee Johnson's right to sort of pick it out and say it. Martin, I might be completely wrong here with what I'm saying, but is there something? Is it just one player or two players that are bad eggs, or is it something more deep rooted at the club?
No, I think it's deep rooted, isn't it? And I think you know, there's been so many symbols of that you know, that lack of care at the club over the past, you know, well, over the past 2.5 years, hasn't there? Since Stuart Donald took over the club, there's corners have been cut. And we, you know, there's only one way that's going to go if you're continually cutting things away, you know, from the state of the pitch to John Cook being unceremoniously exited. And, you know, it's not necessarily him going, but the manner that he went. And it's just, you know, there just seems to be a lack of pride about certain things throughout the club. I think, you know, that obviously transmits on the field, as we've kind of seen with, you know, some of the things that Johnson's been talking about. And, you know, I think we're hopefully on the verge of that change. And, you know, we're in this weird limbo period now where we can't get too angry at the owners because they've decided to sell the club. There's nobody to to change things. So we're just in this weird sort of period of limbo, of no man's land, where we're just plodding on until the takeover gets ratified by the EFL and that new chapter can start, which will hopefully go a long way to rectifying a lot of the things that we talked about. But you talk about Roy Keane's spell in charge there, and I was probably in a majority of supporters of my generation and in a majority of supporters generally, but I would have loved to have seen Keane come back, because the one thing that this club needs is an absolute raising of standards. Yeah. It needs pride put back into it. It needs somebody to grab it by the scruff of its neck and really elevate every aspect of it. And, you know, back in, you know, 2005, 2006, whenever it was, Keane did that in a matter of weeks. And everybody aspired, you know, from the supporters to the people reporting on the club to the players, everybody aspired to get to Roy Keane's level, and it just hit the whole club. And I know it's really difficult at the minute without supporters in the stadium and all that, but we need that personality. We need that person to grab that club and just, you know, make people have, or have that expectation of pride and care because it's been left, you know, from the academy and everything else. We've gone through it in, you know, in minute detail over the past few years. But on Tuesday night, that pitch was a very visible symbol mm-hmm. of the neglect of the club over the past few years.
Jimmy, what were your thoughts on this? So we were talking about attacking midfielders, we've gone really deep.
There's about 10 million different places my brain's going to, because, I mean, you've got someone like Kieran Brady who will tell you and has said on this podcast that the cultural problems at Sunderland have lasted for 30 years. Roy Keane, interesting person to bring up as well, because he admits in his most recent autobiography, he's like, he made a mistake bringing in too many players on good money that yeah. came to Sunderland for the wrong reasons, people that felt they were doing a favour to the club. And that's still a mentality that's there. People who are coming to Sunderland for a big payday rather than to further their career. Then obviously, like Martin touched on, you've got the Eastleigh lot trying to do promotion on the cheap, being arrogant, offering big money, thinking they couldn't fail here, not treating League One with the respect it deserved and getting things completely wrong. And then there's just all these different things where Sunderland's gone wrong over the last 30 years, last 10 years, last 2.5 years. And the big question is, how do you turn it round? And good luck. I mean, bringing in someone like Christian Speakman and elevating youth players sounds great. But then we brought in a new head coach and Dan Neil, one of our most promising youngsters, can't get a luck in the Pizza Cup in Lee Johnson's second game. So has that translated? Is the communication breakdown there already between our new executive and our new head coach? It's really difficult, and it's not something that can be fixed overnight. I mean, good culture is one of those things, you know it when you see it. You look at like a Burnley or a Dortmund, or you look at these teams where there's a real way of playing that's been established over the years and it can carry on. But most teams don't have good cultures, and some stand out for having an especially bad one. And I don't know what the steps to take that back are, what the first step should be. Maybe it's booting out Aidan McGeady. Maybe Phil Parkinson was on a summit. Maybe he's just too awkward and he's too chippy and he's got too high an opinion of himself, and that's where you start. But yeah, no, Sunderland's cultural problems have existed and manifested in many different ways over the last 12 years, whether it's, yeah, the cheapness, the arrogant overpaid players, the lack of consistency in the dugout, the lack of consistency in executive decision-making positions. There's so much that's gone wrong. I don't know how you turn it around. And then the only other thing I'd mention, which is probably quite important, is this is like month 4 or 5 of stadiumless football. And I think more than ever, and it was noticeable last night, you can see the teams that are up for playing in empty stadiums yeah. during month 10 and 11 of the pandemic. And the others who are maybe on autopilot a little bit, Not that they're not trying, not that they're not giving their all, but they're just not going to that extra level. I think that's maybe something we've seen with our team. Like those first 15 minutes, our intensity just wasn't there. Plymouth got to grips with the conditions and got the lead, and we were still sort of like, oh crap, this game's not been called off. Oh crap, we're actually supposed to be playing in the rain. Like we just weren't there. So I feel like there's a lot of different things that you can't really quantify that are wrong with Sunderland at the moment, and it's good to lay them out there, but I'm scratching my head wondering what we should do next.
I was thinking this actually about the basically teams coming to the stadium alike without fans, and it actually must be really nice for the away team to come to, you know, lovely stadium, as I said, you know, fantastic stadium, great facilities, blah blah blah, and have no vocal support against them, sort of thing. It must be like, you know, quite a nice day. You think, like, you know, looking at the teams that have beaten us this season at home, you know, and we see it on the other pod this week, you know, the likes of MK Dons, Wigan, obviously Plymouth, you know, draw into the likes of AFC Wimbledon, sorry, and teams aren't scared to come to us because it's a nice day in the play-in. It's a great day out for them, and they're up for it. Yeah, this is the, I say, it's a horrible phrase to use. This is still their cup final, and we don't seem prepared for that this season at all. You know, I don't know if it's the home comforts they're missing or what. I say, likes of Chris Maguire, he's been terrible this season, and he is definitely a player who needs that crowd behind him to, you know, he wants to be the king, which, you know, I always hate that nickname for him personally, but, you know, he always wants to be the main man, and in an empty stadium, he's not the main man.
I think there's a few interesting bits in that, isn't it? Because, you know, we went through a spell a couple of years ago where it was our fault as match attending fans that the players couldn't win at home.
Yeah.
Right, and now it's because when the supporters aren't there that we can't win at home. So, you know, there's something probably in the middle there that's verging on the truth. I think Jimmy's point about, you know, mentally for the players to be playing in empty stadiums and some relish it and some don't. You know, you can see with Maguire, you know, it's always been evident he's a player who likes the big crowd behind him, gets up for it, he gets motivated by the crowd. And I listened to something, an interview with George Honeyman. It was either before or after we played Hull recently. And he said, you know, if the crowds weren't there when I was a kid, being a professional footballer wouldn't have had anywhere near the appeal it has. And, you know, you can't underestimate the impact the lack of fans has on these players. And then, you factor in, you know for us, for example, the likes of Scowan, Aidan O'Brien have moved north away from, you know, the families and all that sort of stuff during a pandemic. Now, that move from south to north is difficult enough, as we've experienced over the years, for players to make. But without being able to see your family, without being able to socialise, without being able to do all of the things that you would normally do, and the mental difficulties that the pandemic brings to all of us, you know, there's all of these underlying factors as well, which, you know, obviously aren't just unique to Sunderland. But, you know, when we're looking at the players who are playing well, who, you know, given the chance, all that sort of stuff, all of these things need to be factored in. You know, maybe some leeway needs to be given to certain players because of the circumstances that they're actually living and working and operating in.
That's a great point, Martin, actually. Great point. Right, we've gone on for a massive tangent from what we were talking about. I'll very, very quickly, up front, I think we know what the answer is going to be anyway. It's going to be O'Brien and Wyking up front, isn't it? Or do you guys? I'm sure you might hope it's different, but do you think it will be different?
I think you've nailed it. They're the two I've got written down. O'Brien scored. He's been okay. He's been okay the last two games. I wouldn't say more than okay. He's still annoyingly lightweight, but we've started to see a bit of his ability. He scored a good goal. He's someone who can drop off and bring the ball up in midfield. I mean, if Lee Johnson saw Luke O'Neill as a midfielder rather than a striker, that would be an interesting one. Do you put him in one of the two, and do you see what he can do from there? Could O'Brien potentially partner Luke O'Neill? Could he be the one to really benefit from this new system? Do we see Luke O'Neill as a second striker again? That'd be interesting. But no, I'm expecting he scored a hat trick the other week. He'll give Wyke one more chance. As frustrating and as terrible as he was last night, I'm fully expecting it to be those two.
I'm going to be honest, Jimmy. I think after this podcast goes out and the comments that we made of it would be the comment that you've just said that Luke O'Neill should be a striker.
Hey, I'd go along with that. I'd give him a shot. As I said before, he's one of the few players with a natural goal scoring ability, and we've seen at Wickham where he was playing as an advanced midfield player. And he had a little spell under Jack Ross where he was kind of playing as number 10. I think it was the Barnsley at home game where he played really well, and he played an advanced midfield role. I think I'm right in saying that. I might be wrong. But he certainly had a few games where he was playing advanced. And I would play him as a sort of second. I think you've got to give it, until we sign somebody, we've got to try things. And with Gooch being out, you know, I think it was a Port Vale game, wasn't it, where Gooch and O'Brien played together. And
yes.
In that system, like, O'Brien kind of often played on the shoulder and Gooch came and held the ball up. And, you know, you look at, and that's obviously how you need to play it too. Somebody's got to play on the last man. Somebody's got to come deep and hold it up. And because of Gooch's positive COVID test, he obviously dropped out of the Wimbledon game. And it was, you know, rumoured beforehand that Gooch and O'Brien would have started that game as the front two. And in which case, O'Brien would have been on the last man, Gooch dropping deep. And because Gooch dropped out, O'Brien had to be the player slightly deeper, and Wyke on the last man, because Wyke can't come and hold the ball up. So you've kind of got this dilemma now where O'Brien's kind of maybe playing not his natural role up front. And, you know, I tell you what, if I was Johnson, I'd be seriously considering partnering, if O'Neill's fit, I'd be going, well, let's play O'Brien on the shoulder of the last defender and put O'Neill alongside him slightly withdrawn. But O'Neill can come deep, link up the play. O'Neill's energy up there, you know, if you compare O'Neill's energy to Charlie Wyke's statuesque...
Oh, yeah, of course.
...perform, like, that would just give you an instant boost anyway.
That's good. Yeah, fair play, Jim. I'm getting turned on this.
Sorry, me and Jimmy might be on the island. Never mind.
Yeah.
But no, I think it's got merit.
So let's have a look then at our opposition on Saturday. So Shrewsbury Town and our... Well, our old assistant manager, Steve Cottrell, obviously in charge. Obviously, he's in hospital at the moment with COVID, and so we wish him all the best. Sounds like he's out of the worst of it, which is, thankful for that. So, all the best to him. He seems to have turned a bit of a corner there, though. They're currently 17th in the league, which I think, because it's let's say how this league is at the moment, that's a little bit unfair to him. And, we may think that's a little bit going to be an easy touch. But their form is actually very good. Now, they haven't played any games, league games, though, yet this year. Southampton in the Cup this week was their first game of 2021. And they put a good account of themselves, by all account. They did lose 2-0. But since the 21st of November, they've not actually lost in the league. And that includes draws against MK Dons and Accrington Stanley, and also against Charlton. But then they have beat Hull away, Lincoln away, Doncaster away, drew Wigan, and then beat Blackpool. So they're on a little bit of a good run, albeit they have had a break because of COVID. Sean Woolley up front's gotten 5 goals and 3 assists, so they've got a player to watch out for. Jimmy, what are your thoughts on Saturday's opposition?
It's concerning, isn't it? When you read it like that, Brett. I mean, that's really impressive. Like they were, Shrewsbury are one of those teams you don't really give a second's thought to be honest. They've sort of, in the 2 years we've been in the league, both years they've been sort of lower mid-table. They don't really have that many outstanding players. I think Pierre at centre-back's maybe their best player based off what I've seen and what I've heard.
Well, he's got 4 goals this season.
Oh, well, that's not bad. But yeah, no, it's just you look at that record since Cottrell went in and you think, what on earth must he have done there? Because the teams they've been beat there are all teams that we'd expect to be right up there, that right up amongst us or above us in the table. So whatever he's doing, it seems to be working. I mean, it's a weird squad. It's a mix of sort of like unknown journeymen and then players that have played higher that are coming back down. Whatever Cottrell's doing there is working. And it's obviously we can't just sort of look at them and pencil in 3 points when you list off the form they've had and the results they've had against promotion chasing teams.
So if you look at their form since they've beat Ipswich, our form since we beat Ipswich on November the 3rd, as I say, we've lost to MK Dons and Wigan, and obviously now Plymouth, and drew with Wimbledon and Hull at home. So our home form, sorry, I touched on it a bit earlier, before yesterday, we're actually, for the last 6 games, 17th in the form table for home games. So our home form is shocking. Our last 6 away games were actually 3rd, so that's what's pushing us up. But, Martin, this is going to be a tough game on Saturday.
Oh, it's going to be a very tough game. Like you look at Shrewsbury.
look at all the facts.
Oh, like Shrewsbury are sort of down the table because of the home record. I think they've won 1 in 9 at home, and away from home, I think they've won the ninth in the away league. Like they've won 4 and drawn 4 out of 11 away games, and as you say, they've beaten some pretty good teams on the travels as well. And like you factor their away record in with our home record, I just found this really interesting. Like there's six teams at the bottom of the away form league, right? Milton Keynes, Wigan, Northampton, Burton Albion, Swindon, and Plymouth. We've played 4 of those and we've picked up 1 point. So you
and we're supposed to be challenging for promotion.
Well, yeah, there's a lots of things we're supposed to be doing, isn't there?
Yeah.
So like, it's going to be a really hard game, and as you say, Cottrell's come in and he's done a really good job there. He's obviously got his notebooks out from when he was at Sunderland, because he used to love standing on the touchline jotting things down, didn't he? Maybe he's gone back and found some nuggets in there. That was always one of my favourite.
He's obviously learned off Howard Wilkinson, hasn't he?
Oh, the anecdote, and I'm sure it's probably true. Cottrell was taking notes on the sideline in one game, and he paused, looked up, pondered what to write. And somebody shouted, "What's the matter, Cottrell? Don't you know how to spell shite?" And that kind of summed him up at Sunderland, didn't it? But no, he's done a good job there, to be fair to him.
No, he's doing well. And there's also a fear of mine. You put it into our little chat beforehand that there's word that Brendan Galloway may be going there from Luton. Now, obviously, you remember he was with us.
It's another ghost of Christmas past, isn't it?
Exactly that. So we can already guarantee it now. If he signs before Friday and he's in that team for Saturday, he will have the game of his life. And we'll wonder, why did we just get rid of him? Because it's the rule of Sunderland. That's what's going to happen.
Another terrible player.
Surely.
Disgraceful for
us. It's going to be like a Vietnam veteran going back to Vietnam. He's going to have PTSD if he comes back to Sunderland. Like, this guy was, like, starting games for Everton as a teenager. He came to Sunderland and, like, it was like someone was, like, trying to shoot him in the crowd. He just looked terrified every game. Like, I've never seen anything like it. I think you could put Brendan Galloway's 5 or 6 games for Sunderland up against anything else, all the rubbish we've seen in the last 5 years, and it might be the worst. I have no idea what happened to the lad. He was terrible in his first game, and then it was the snowball started going down the hill. It was awful.
I'm praying so much that he doesn't sign for them, because I can see it already what's going to happen.
Especially these
last 2-3 minutes of conversation, we've just completely jinxed ourselves. So let's go prediction then, ahead of the game. Jimmy, what's your thoughts then? What's going to happen on Saturday?
I'm going to have to go 1-0 Sunderland. I mean, it's exactly the sort of game that sums up why I've been struggling. It's the game that's really killing our promotion chance at the moment. Us at home against a team that we're going to have to break down. It's just the game we can't win for the lives of us. Like, Johnson's tried different things. We're a bit more direct against Hull. We played slow football against Wigan and AFC Wimbledon. God knows what he's going to try, if he's going to stick with his 4-2-2. I just have to believe we're going to win. I have to believe that eventually law of averages says we win one of these games and that we're going to win on Saturday.
You're going for weird. Martin, what's your thoughts?
Well, I predicted Sunderland 4, Plymouth 0 before our game on Tuesday, so you should take my predictions with an absolute pinch of salt. I'd be very, very happy, obviously, but surprised if we come out with the game on Saturday with 3 points. And that is just a reflection of where we are now. You know, to my mind, we've regressed since Lee Johnson took over, and hopefully it's one step back to go 2 or 3 steps forward. Not necessarily in terms of the if you're breaking down performances, I think, you know, there's been improvements in areas of performance. But as a cohesive unit and as an outcome of over 90 minutes, you know, statistically, points wise, we've played some poor sides really, and we haven't picked up points. And also, I think it's probably a flip of the coin whether we win on Saturday or not. I'll sit in the fence. I'll go for a draw is my prediction. But as I say, hoping we win. But I'd be very pleasantly surprised if we do, which is terrible, isn't it? It's Shrewsbury.
I know that's the annoying thing. We're playing Shrewsbury at home, and we're panicking about getting 3 points again.
Like, how did it come to this? Yeah. Like, seriously,
it should be, how many are we going to win by on Saturday? not anymore. Right then, gents. Well, I think we've gone on for just about enough. We've gone on quite a few tangents tonight, which is nice. It leads me just to sort of mention, obviously you two are both actually involved in this as well. So there's a few of us who have got together at Roker Port to, we're running cycling, walking, 1,084 miles. And we're doing it for Campaign Against Living Miserably. That's Calm there. If you fancy sponsoring us, I say Jimmy at the moment is flying with sneaky little 15-mile runs he keeps popping up with. Jimmy, you're doing very, very well. I think you're leading at the moment, aren't you?
It's very close between me and you, mate. You're sort of selling yourself short there. You've been keeping up with me. These sneaky 10-mile runs doing.
I'm it's like trying, doing a podcast with Steve Cram and Steve Avetti. You're like, Jesus.
Thing is, I think I've got about 10, 15 years on Jimmy. That's the problem. I'm not feeling. But no, if you fancy sponsoring us, the hashtag is, it's hashtag RR1084. So basically what it is, that 1,084 miles we've plucked out of nowhere is 2 trips from the Stadium of Light to Wembley and back. So yeah, we're on course to hit our targets. So we're pleased with that. The lads are all doing well. But Martin, thank you very much for your time tonight.
Cheers, mate. Been a pleasure.
And Jimmy, as always, pleasure speaking to you as well.
Cheers, lads. Enjoyed it.
And thank you for listening. So, as always, subscribe. It's on Acast, Apple, Spotify, YouTube. I think we're still on Amazon. But yeah, thank you very much for listening. Speak another time. Thanks a lot.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.